1972, Joey Gallo killed in Little Italy during dinner at Umberto's Clam House.
An hour from now, be it tonight, or 100 years from now, I'm in jail. I mean,
they get there by violence, and often as not, they leave by violence.
Between $3 and $5 million in cash and valuables was taken from the Lufthansa cargo terminal out at Kennedy Airport.
I can give you guys $500,000 a year without a problem.
New York City is a war zone for mobsters and their targets.
Hello everyone, and welcome into episode 49 of The Black Hand, an organized crime history podcast. I'm your host, Bliss Grieve, and on today's show, we're going to be talking about Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow, a Chinese gangster who would eventually run San Francisco's Chinatown. He came up as a member of a juvenile Chinatown gang known as the Hop Sing Boys, eventually becoming a higher-up, giving him the platform to become the second-in-command of the Wo Hop To Triad. And after he served a stretch following a takedown of the Wo Hop To, he waged a power struggle on the streets that resulted in him becoming the leader of the Hop Sing Tong, as well as another criminal organization. Before we get started, if you want to support the show, please rate it and go follow the show's Instagram and Twitter pages at The Black Hand Pod. And please feel free to reach out. Also, consider giving a little bit to the show's Venmo at The Black Hand Pod as well. The link's in the description. But without further ado, let's get right into today's episode. Raymond Chow was born Chow Kwok Chung, one of five brothers in Hong Kong, on December 31st, 1959. Of Taishanese descent, Chow's family comes from a coastal city in the southern Guangdong province of China. His father owned a barbershop, but lost his business to gambling debts. As a result, the family moved into a one-room shack for about a year until it burned down. And amidst this turmoil in his early life, Raymond turned to the streets pretty early on. On the program Gangland, Chow said he first joined a gang in his native Hong Kong when he was just 9 years old. And after joining the gang, he intervened in a fight involving his gang mentor by striking his mentor's opponent on the head with a knife, becoming a gang hero in the process. But by 1966, when Chow was 17, he and his family came to the United States, settling in San Francisco. Specifically, they settled in the Chinatown neighborhood, an area rife with gangs and gang violence at the time. So it wouldn't take long for Chow to find his way back into the streets, and he wasn't alone in that respect. Because in the mid-1960s, immigration restrictions to the US were loosened, and an influx of youths from Hong Kong, like Raymond, as well as from Macau, came stateside and enrolled in high schools. So you had a mass of foreign-born teens in schools, and initially they didn't know each other, and the other kids teased, made fun of, and beat up the foreign-born. But what the local teens didn't realize was that some of the youth were actually from the streets, and many of them were even gang members in China. Chow himself actually carried a letter of introduction from the leader of his gang in Hong Kong when he immigrated to San Francisco. And he joined up with a local Asian gang called the Hop Sing Boys, with ties to the Hop Sing Tong, at 17 after dropping out of high school. In an early incident with the gang, Chow was dropped off at a home in Hillsboro, California, and was told to beat up the resident to send a message. And though he started rising through the ranks quickly, he had jumped into streets filled with turmoil, and there was a gang war going on that was about to cause a massacre, which Chow would bear witness to. The 70s were full of much more brazen violence than when the gangs really started picking up steam in the mid-1960s. And at the time, there was an outright war going on between the Joe Boys and numerous other Asian gangs, with numerous gangs teaming up against the Joe Boys. They had been building up to about 150 members and were probably a lot more violent than other gangs at the time. But that was evened out by the fact that the Hop Sing Boys, Hua Qing, and Sui Sing Tong had allied together to fight the Joe Boys. And this rivalry could be traced back to 1969, when the first victim was killed. And the gang war got so severe that people in the community were afraid to even go out shopping. But what really elevated the violence to the point of a massacre was the fireworks racket. Before then, many young Asian gangsters were shining shoes for 10 cents apiece, but the fireworks business posed the opportunity to make a couple hundred bucks at a time, and the gangs naturally gravitated towards the racket. Most of the firework dealers at the time were guys who lived in the local project housing, so the Hua Qing went to these project dealers and demanded a payoff if they were going to continue their business, and most of them gave in. But you had some dealers who were defiant and didn't want to cave in to the extortion, so the Zhou boys stepped in and basically said, "You shouldn't have to put up with that from the Hua Qing and Hop Sing boys. Pay us instead, and we'll protect you." The pivotal moment came on the 4th of July, 1977, when the Hua Qing went down to collect the final payment from the dealers. The Zhou boys were there, and a face-off and gun battle ensued, and when it was all said and done, a Zhou boy named Felix Huey had been killed, while two Zhou boys and a Hop Sing boy had been shot and wounded. And the murder was seen as some form of retaliation for the earlier death of a Hua Qing member who had been shot a dozen times that same year. However, it's important to acknowledge that this was new territory, a big battle out in the open, and it only served to terrify the community even further. This was only compounded by the fact that everyone was just waiting for the Zhou boys to retaliate. But in the meantime, the other side couldn't help themselves but to egg on the conflict. The Zhou boys were to regularly go and pay their respects to other gang members that had been killed, but they started reporting that the Hua Qing and the Hop Sing boys were vandalizing the Zhou boys' headstones. So everyone knew something was going to happen, it was just a matter of when and where, and the Zhou boys were taking their time, sitting back and planning. Preparations began in early 1977 when Zhou boys' members began acquiring weapons that would be used in the eventual Golden Dragon Massacre. Entering the summer of 1977, Tom Yu, a leader of the gang, convinced a longtime friend who owned a home in Pacifica, California, to store the weapons wrapped in cloth in the front closet of his home. Then, on August 27th, Yu met with Carlos John, a member of another gang. Yu asked John to keep track of Hua Qing and allied Hop Sing members over the upcoming Labor Day weekend, showing special interest in where they gathered late at night. The conspirators decided to target the Golden Dragon restaurant because it was a favorite hangout of both the Hua Qing and Hop Sing boys. But the planned attack would also financially damage Jack Lee, a Hop Sing Tong elder who co-owned the restaurant. Tom Yu gave John the phone number to the Pacifica home and asked him to call on the following Saturday. That Friday night, September 2nd, members of the Zhou boys gathered in Pacifica, retrieved the weapons, and put them on display. Yu received a phone call at 1 a.m. on Saturday morning, and after a brief, private conversation, he ordered the weapons to be put back into the closet. And after stealing a getaway car, the gang members returned to retrieve the guns. And at 2 a.m. on Sunday, September 4th, 1977, Tom Yu received a phone call from Carlos John, who said that members of the rival Hua Qing gang, including Michael Louie, one of its leaders, were present at the Golden Dragon restaurant in San Francisco's Chinatown. A group of five Zhou boys drove to the Golden Dragon, parking near the restaurant about 40 minutes later. At which point, the four-man hit team, armed with 45 caliber Commando Mark III rifles, two 12-gauge shotguns, and a 38 caliber revolver, entered the restaurant from the second entrance, looking for members of the Hua Qing. A crowd estimated at between 50 or more than 100 people, many of whom were tourists, were present at the restaurant at the time of the shooting. Regardless, the hit team opened fire without warning, killing five people, including two tourists, and wounding 11 others, none of whom were gang members. The intended targets, the leadership of the Hua Qing and Hop Sing, were sitting at a table in the back of the restaurant and weren't injured in the shooting. Up to 10 members of the Hua Qing, including their leader Michael Louie, ducked under a table during the gunfire. Raymond Chow was even among those who survived the attack. In the end, the shooting lasted less than 60 seconds, and police later called it the worst mass shooting in San Francisco history. And though Chow had no involvement in the actual shooting, I felt that it was an important story to tell because it really shows the climate of the gang culture he was rising through. But besides the bodies that were dropped as a result of the shooting, it would have devastating consequences for the Asian gang landscape. Because in the aftermath of the massacre, a gang task force was formed that at its inception was mainly focused on crimes committed by the mass of Asian gangs in the area. and it's likely that this played a role in Chow being convicted of his first crime in the United States when he was found guilty of strong-arm robbery in 1978 at the age of 19. A victim identified Chow as one of a trio of robbers who held up a group of 23 at a meeting of the Chinese American Institute of Engineers. When one of the victims was being returned from the Hall of Justice, he recognized Chow's distinctive jade ring and medallion. He received an 11-year sentence for the crime, of which he ended up serving about 7.5 years. During his first stint in prison, he studied to become a deep-sea welder, but his education was interrupted by a prison riot, and he turned to dealing heroin inside San Quentin instead. He was then set free in 1985, only to realize that his former gang, the Hop Sing Boys, had been severely weakened after being run out of town by the Hua Qing. So he stopped at a noodle shop on his way back to San Francisco, where he convinced the prostitutes outside to work for him and set up an escort service. And though Danny Wong, leader of the Hua Qing at the time, approached Chow and asked him to become a member of the Hua organization, Chow refused. However, he remained active in the streets and turned up his violence. And just 1 year after his release from his robbery stint, Chow shot a Hua Qing gang member named David Quach, who had been in an altercation with his sister-in-law. In the aftermath, Chow was charged with 28 counts of assault with a deadly weapon, attempted murder, and illegal possession of a firearm, and was sentenced to 3 years in 1987. He was released in 1989, and this time around, he tried to renounce crime and found work as a bagger in a grocery store. But he left that job when his boss became suspicious after receiving a call from the San Francisco PD's gang task force. He also tried to work as a bodyguard in an Oakland casino, but met a man named Peter Chong not long after, an event that would throw Chow back into the highest levels of Asian organized crime. Because Chong had come to the US from Hong Kong, China in 1982 under the guise of starting a Chinese opera company. But in reality, Chong, a member of the Wo Hop To triad back in Hong Kong, was sent to San Francisco, which was intended to be the first location for the triad's plan to establish itself in America. The Wo Hop To is and has been a heavyweight criminal organization for a long time, and they're even among the four major groups that make up organized crime in China, including the Wo Sheng Wo, the 14K triad, and the Sun Yian, which the Wo Hop To has close links to. The plan was for Chong to settle in San Francisco and consolidate all Asian gangs operating in the area, and from there, spread out into drug distribution across the country. So when Chong met Chow at that casino in 1989 and got to know him, he eventually decided to make Raymond his American lieutenant, and the two formed an alliance. As a result, Chow, who was seen as a higher-up in what was left of the Hop Sing Boys, got the gang to merge with the Wo Hop To, and Chow eventually became the Wo Hop To's number two in charge. He even opened a boys' athletic club in the Hop Sing Tong building in San Francisco to recruit new members. Then, in the early morning of August 28, 1990, Chow was in the lead car of two that were stopped by police after making an illegal U-turn in Foster City, California. He claimed that he was driving a drunk friend home from a bar, but was unable to produce the registration for the car and couldn't account for his whereabouts earlier in the day. Norman Sue was a passenger, and he claimed to have been kidnapped, but declined to implicate Chow. The officer noticed that Sue appeared to be nervous and was trying to get his attention, and when he was able to speak privately with the officer, Sue said, quote, "I'm being kidnapped. Those three have been holding me against my will in Daly City for 12 hours. Sue then told the officer that he was being held in connection with a debt owed to Chow, and that the safety of both him and his family had been threatened if he was unable to pay. Despite this, I wasn't able to find anything stating that Chow faced any consequences as a result of this incident. Regardless, he had bigger problems to worry about." Because around the same time, a power struggle between the Hua Qing and the Wo Hop To broke out in San Francisco. One of the first victims was a Hua Qing member named Danny Vong, who was killed in April 1990 outside the Cats nightclub. And in retaliation, just a month later, the Hua Qing killed a Wo Hop To member named Michael Chang Wu outside a nightclub in North Beach. But eventually, Hua Qing leader Danny Wong called a ceasefire at the Harbor Village and was toasted by Peter Chong for his peacemaking efforts. However, despite this apparent ceasefire, the violence continued, culminating in the assassination of Danny Wong himself, likely ordered by Peter Chong. And in April 1991, three hitmen from Seattle's Chinatown pulled Wong from his car and shot him to death just minutes after he left a mahjong game in the basement of a Chinatown Tong building. This hit forced the Hua Qing to leave the Bay Area, deciding to relocate to Los Angeles, leaving Peter Chong, Raymond Chow, and the Wohop Toe as the only Asian organized crime element left in San Francisco's Chinatown. And a U.S. Senate report in December 1992 even stated, quote, "The Wohop Toe is now in control of virtually all Asian organized crime in the Bay Area." But they weren't satisfied with simply controlling a region of California and wanted to extend their reach even further, leading to a supposed power play on the opposite side of the U.S. And in 1991, Peter Chong sent an underling to Boston, Massachusetts, to establish a foothold on the East Coast, the first step in the Triad's plan to control organized crime in Chinatowns throughout the U.S. But after the underling was killed in the Boston Chinatown massacre, it's alleged that Peter Chong and Raymond Chow, along with an associate named Wayne Kwong, were behind a failed plot to murder the leader of Boston's Chinese underground at the time, named Baik Ming, who we talked about pretty extensively in episode 38. However, the group would soon have bigger problems to deal with than a failed hit on the other side of the country, because Peter Chong was summoned to testify before the U.S. Senate on November 5, 1991, and was asked if he was the head of the Wohop Toe or if he was responsible or involved in the murder of Hua Qing leader Danny Wong. Chong declined to answer each and every question, citing his Fifth Amendment rights. Chow had his own problems to deal with at the time, though, problems that would end up affecting the highest levels of the Wohop Toe. And on May 31, 1992, he was arrested for suspected drug dealing at LaGuardia Airport in New York City while holding $12,000 in cash, leading him to believe that there was a confidential informant within the organization. And after he noticed that Madeline Lee's sentence was significantly lighter than her partner's following their arrest for an attempted robbery, Chow identified her as the informant and twice ordered her to be attacked. Lee took down the license plate number of the getaway car after the first beating, which left her with a broken shoulder and missing teeth. She even unwittingly went to Chow with the license plate information to find out who had beaten her. But Chow wasn't satisfied with her injuries the first time around and ordered her to be attacked a second time. This time, however, a passing police officer intervened and one of the assailants, named Raymond Lee, was arrested. In the aftermath, Chow ordered Lee to drop the charges, but she refused, and decided instead to help the police build a case against the leader of the Wohop Toe, including Raymond Chow and Peter Chong. As a result, Chow, Chong, and 17 others were indicted on 48 counts of racketeering in 1993. At the time, Chow had already been arrested on charges of murder for hire, drug trafficking, and illegal firearms, while Chong had already fled the U.S. a few days ahead of the indictment following a separate 1992 arrest on gambling charges. And as a result of his earlier arrest, Chow would be tried in two separate proceedings. The first trial was for illegal gun sales, and the second was for racketeering. His first trial resulted in a conviction on February 21, 1995, 2 weeks after it started, for 6 counts of illegal firearms trafficking, while 2 of his co-defendants had pleaded guilty earlier in exchange for reduced sentences. And though he was eventually sentenced to a little over 23 years, it would take about a year and a half, because he was undergoing his second trial, this one for 38 counts of racketeering, including charges of prostitution, drugs, money laundering, illegal gambling, arson, and murder for hire. It started in March 1996 and was declared a mistrial just 2 months later. Despite this, he had no plans on serving the full sentence he received from his first trial, and before long, he would get his shot at that. Because in 1995, the original indictment against Chow and Peter Chong had been amended, and Chong was arrested in Hong Kong in 1998 after exhausting his appeals. Chong was extradited to the U.S. in 2000. And when he eventually went to trial in the early 2000s, Chow decided to flip and testify against his former boss in exchange for a reduced sentence. As a result, Chong was found guilty of racketeering, murder for hire, extortion, and arson in 2002, and was sentenced to 16 years in prison. For his efforts, Chow only had to serve 7 years of his 24-year sentence. He was first released to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement in May 2002, and then put into supervised release from prison in January 2003. He requested a new identity and location under witness protection, but his request was denied by the prosecuting attorney, and he was returned to San Francisco, required to wear a tracking device under the terms of his release. Chow's confinement to home ended in 2004, and his term of supervised release ended the following year. But Chow wasn't done running the streets just yet. And shortly after Chow was released from prison in late 2003, a prominent Chinatown leader named Alan Luong approached the FBI, saying that Chow intended to, quote, clean up Chinatown by removing him and the head of another Tong. Likely because Leung served as president of the Hop Sing Tong 4 times, beginning in 1994 after the previous leadership of the Wo Hop To, which had really absorbed the group, including Chow and Chong, were imprisoned. Leung was also the dragon head of the Gi Kong Tong, also known as the CKT, a fraternal association in San Francisco, sometimes referred to as the Chinese Freemasons. The beef all started when an associate of Chow's contacted Jack Lee, a Hop Sing Tong elder, to ask for money to, quote, do business with the Hop Sing. And Lee subsequently raised $120,000 in pledges for a planned local youth group from Hop Sing chapters in other West Coast states. And while the Hop Sing was still deciding whether to release the money to Chow, the headquarters of Four Tongs and a restaurant were splattered with red paint on February 25, 2005, while the headquarters of the Hop Sing were spared. But less than a month later, the Hop Sing voted to turn down the request for money, and the next day, shots were fired into the headquarters of the Hop Sing Tong. A man named Kevin Kam would later testify that Chow had ordered him to shoot up the headquarters. Leung approached the FBI again in the wake of the Hop Sing shooting and said that Chow had personally demanded $100,000 at the Hop Sing headquarters in late 2004. Since Chow was still in supervised release, the FBI questioned him about the incident and he countered that the Hop Sing had instead approached him and, quote, wanted him to loan shark the money. Likely as a result, shortly afterward, Chow was taken into custody on immigration charges stemming from his apparent association with Chinatown gangs, which was a violation of his deal with prosecutors, and deportation proceedings began. Leung stated that Chow or his associates would try to get him and the Hop Sing board members in retaliation for the failed demand for money. But Leung refused to wear a listening device, and the extortion case died due to lack of evidence. Regardless, Chow managed to join the Gi Kong Tong around this time. According to a man named Kong Fet Chanthavong, Chow called a meeting in mid-2005 in the back room of an Oakland bar where he instructed Chanthavong and 2 others to murder Leung. At the time, Alan Leung was president of the Hop Sing Tong and dragon head of the CKT. But because the Hop Sing refused to loan money to Chow to start a business, he had become upset and told his associate, Wen Bing Lee, that Lee should replace Leung as head of the CKT. Chow then instructed an associate named Kevin Kam to plan with Lee to get rid of Alan Leung, and they'd recruit Chanthavong into the murder plot, who was tasked with driving by Leung's shops to watch his movements. And on February 27, 2006, Alan Leung was shot and killed by an unidentified suspect at his Chinatown import-export business on Jackson Street. According to the police, the gunman entered Leung's office and demanded cash, and though Leung offered it to him, the unknown suspect shot Leung in an execution-style slang before he could hand over the money. Wen Bing Lee was later indicted in January 2017 for the murder, but died in 2018 before he could go to trial. As a result, Chow led a Freemason salute to Leung at his funeral on March 18, 2006, and ascended to the leadership of the Gi Kong Tong in a ceremony in August, where he received an official certificate of honor from San Francisco. However, San Francisco police, as well as the FBI, began investigating the murder of Leung by staking out Chow's swearing-in ceremony. The government's probe of Chow was dubbed Operation White Suit after Chow visibly and uniquely wore a white mourning suit to Leung's funeral. And although Chow had previously supported Lee as Dragonhead, they argued after Leung's funeral, but Chow's ascension remained solidified. Meanwhile, for Operation White Suit, an undercover FBI agent, identified by the alias David Jordan, was introduced to Chow in May 2010 as an East Coast emissary for La Cosa Nostra. During a June 2010 fishing trip in Hawaii, Chow told Jordan and another undercover agent working under the alias Jimmy Chen that although he couldn't be involved in any illegal activities, he could introduce them to people who could. And in August 2010, Chow introduced Jordan to Keith Jackson, president of the San Francisco Board of Education and a close friend of Leland Yee, who will become important later on. Jordan started laundering money with Chow's associates in February 2011, and by April of the same year, Chow and Jordan had grown so close that at a karaoke bar, Chow whispered to Jordan that he knew of and approved all criminal activities in the Geekong Tong, serving as a judge within the organization. But the device that Jordan was wearing failed to record Chow's whisper. Regardless, Jordan would use a CKT to launder more than $2 million reportedly gathered from illegal activities, and was later inducted in the CKT as a consultant in March 2012. And although Chow never laundered any money himself, Jordan reported that Chow had sanctioned others within the CKT to work with him. And due to his clear worth to the organization, Jordan was allowed to expand his activities by December 2013 to include the trafficking of stolen liquor, cigarettes without a tax stamp, and marijuana. But for a second there, in the early 2010s, it looked like Chow soon wouldn't be in a position to make any calls, as a man named Jim Tat Kong opposed Chow for the leadership of the Hop Sing Tong during an election meeting held in 2011. Chow was incensed that Kong had dared to challenge his authority and at a karaoke bar after that meeting told an associate, quote, "Somebody needs to take care of Jimmy." And though Chow would end up winning the election, he still expelled Kong from the group and never forgot about the power grab. And just 2 years later, Kong and his girlfriend were found dead in their minivan near Fort Bragg on October 17, 2013. Each had been killed by a single gunshot to the head. A double homicide which Chow would be eventually tried and convicted for. Then on August 26, 2014, Chow was arrested during an FBI raid in connection with an investigation into official corruption by a California state senator named Leland Yee. Chow faced charges of money laundering and conspiracy to deal stolen property. He was also accused of operating a faction in the CKT as a racketeering enterprise that trafficked in drugs, stolen weapons, and stolen items. Federal authorities alleged Chow's reformation was a facade and charged him with 7 counts of money laundering, 2 counts of conspiring to transport and receive stolen liquor, and 1 count of conspiracy to traffic untaxed cigarettes. And he faced a maximum of 20 years imprisonment for each money laundering count, at least. Then, in July 2014, a 228-count superseding indictment was filed, which expanded the charges to include racketeering, more counts of money laundering, and conspiracy to receive and transport stolen property, unlicensed firearms dealing, murder for hire, and wire fraud. 2 months later, in September 2014, Chow sued the city of San Francisco and Mayor Edwin Lee, asking them to disclose records, which Chow claimed would show that an undercover FBI agent, identified by his alias, Michael Anthony King, paid a total of $20,000 in bribes to Lee as a campaign contribution. King and Jordan had worked together on the investigation into Leland Yee, and King was the lead undercover until he was removed, allegedly for financial misconduct. According to FBI wiretaps, the bribes were solicited by others on behalf of Lee, but it wasn't clear if he was aware of their source. A trio was charged with soliciting the bribe, but by 2017, many of the counts had been dismissed, and the remaining defendants accepted a no-contest plea deal in 2019, which resulted in no additional time served in prison. While a separate trial was ordered for Yi on the political bribery and illegal firearms importation charges following a hearing in November 2014. On July 7, 2015, Chow declined to take a plea deal from prosecutors on the racketeering charges and was ordered to stand trial with seven other defendants in November. While Yi and several other defendants had all pleaded guilty to racketeering on July 1st, of the three associates, two also admitted to participating in illegal activities through the CKT, including narcotics distribution, firearm sales, and murder for hire. Then, all seven of Chow's fellow defendants pleaded guilty in September and were removed from the upcoming trial due to a defense motion to sever the other defendants. And after announcing that they had uncovered new evidence in September, federal prosecutors formally added charges of conspiracy to commit murder in connection with the deaths of Alan Lee Young and Jim Tat Kong on October 15, 2015. Then, the judge severed all charges that could result in the death penalty from the upcoming trial, which meant that Chow could potentially face two trials, one for the earlier charges of racketeering and money laundering under his 2014 indictment, and a second one for the murder charges. As a result, prosecutors issued a third, 162-count superseding indictment, and Chow pleaded not guilty to the new charges of murdering Lee Young and conspiracy to commit the murder of Kong in aid of racketeering. However, the murder conspiracy charges were later combined with the racketeering charges in a single trial, and prosecutors announced that they wouldn't seek the death penalty. Regardless, his trial began on November 9, 2015, and on January 8, 2016, Chow was found guilty on all 162 counts, including murder in aid of racketeering, racketeering conspiracy, conspiring to murder another rival, receiving and transporting stolen liquor across state lines, and money laundering. And though Chow's lawyers filed for a new trial, alleging the number of defense witnesses was unfairly limited, and previous testimony in 2002 regarding the 1991 murder of Danny Wong had been wrongfully used against him, the motion was denied on June 2, 2016. As a result, just 2 months later, Chow was sentenced to two life terms, one for racketeering and one for murder, plus 20 years for the other convictions. And he is currently serving out his sentence at USP Terre Haute. But that's really all I have for you guys today. I hope you all thoroughly enjoyed today's show, and tune back in next week for episode 50. If you enjoyed today's show, please give it a rating and follow the show's Instagram and Twitter pages at The Black Hand Pod. And feel free to reach out with feedback, suggestions, and comments. Also, please consider giving a little bit to the show's Venmo at The Black Hand Pod as well. But with that said, I hope you all have a great rest of your day. This is your host, Bliss Grieve, signing out.